This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Film critic T.T. Stern Enzi says documentaries about the lives of contemporary musicians are hot right now, and he has a few must-see recommendations in his essay this month on our website, WVXU.org. He joins me now to talk about some of the films he's seen and what the rest of us will be able to see soon. Welcome back, T.T.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Always fun to have you. There are a lot of documentaries about music that are either already streaming or will be streaming or in theaters soon. Why do you think that is? Is there one movie that you think kicked off this trend?
You know, I'm not sure that I can say there's one movie that has kicked this off, but I would definitely say over the last couple of years of going to festivals, this has become sort of a growing trend. And it's really exciting, especially on the festival side, because it sets up an opportunity for easy programming. These festivals have the chance to say, hey, I can bring this film in, and if the band is still out there and they're willing to perform, there's an opportunity for them to come and grace audiences at the festival and, you know, allow, especially if they're an older act, that allows for the opportunity for a little nostalgia to kind of play into the things as well. So I just feel like, yeah, there's a moment that we're in, and I think looking at how the music industry as a whole is moving with so many artists, you know, legacy artists that are selling their catalogs and things like that, that the music and that fandom is really kind of in need of some service, and this is a great way to do it.
Yeah. Okay, very selfishly, I want to start our conversation with one of the films on your list that I've also seen, The Greatest Night in Pop. For any of our listeners who've never heard the song, We Are the World, which I don't know if that's a curse or a blessing to have not heard the song, what is this film about?
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone who hasn't had some exposure or experience with the song. I mean, yeah, it was one of those, you know, in the 80s, it was, again, a huge moment. We were looking at the possibility of musicians and people coming together to kind of change the world. That was really the call that everyone had. So you had these collections of artists who would get together to do these one-off songs and donate the proceeds. So We Are the World was part of that movement. And it was such a huge song, and there were so many people involved. I don't think even at the time that any of us understood what went on behind the scenes to kind of pull that together. It was the night of, you know, one of the big award shows. Everybody leaves that show. Well, not everybody, but almost everybody leaves the show. They come to this location. They all get together. And, you know, if you know the We Are the World song, you understand that really, if you were anyone in that 80s period, you had a line in the song and you got to sing it in your style, in your way. And somehow it all came together in a really weirdly beautiful song. But the behind the scenes, again, you know, Michael Jackson is trying to work with Lionel Richie and, you know, a few other people to put it all together. And you would think that that combination of people would not have ever created a song that could have melded all of those different styles and personalities together in the way that they did. And I love it just because there are so many funny background stories. You know, Al Jarreau, who I was a huge Al Jarreau fan, he was drunk. And I love watching the documentary and you see him and he's just like, he can't figure out what he's doing. And, you know, Bob Dylan, the great Bob Dylan is there and he's kind of like, I can't figure out how you want me to sing this. And Stevie Wonder does a Bob Dylan impression.
That's
and
my favorite part.
It is the most absurd thing ever. But as soon as Stevie does it, Bob's like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, that's what you want. I can do that. So again, it's the nostalgia. And it's funny to include that film in this mix because it's not necessarily about a band or a musician, but it's really kind of the origin story of a song, which is just as powerful and really kind of fun and impactful. And again, that nostalgia is completely there.
Yeah, it totally is. And I love the kind of awkward interactions between some of these megastars who had never spent a lot of time together. And you think, oh,
yes,
this is who freaks out Cyndi Lauper. You know, it was fun. Well, let's talk next about Piece by Piece. This sounds like a really fun one. I obviously haven't seen this. Explain who this biopic is about and what makes it so different.
Yeah, it's Pharrell. And I think just saying his name alone will probably help inspire thoughts of, oh, okay, it's a Pharrell biopic. Did we need a Pharrell biopic? Yes, we did. And we do. Because his biopic is completely different than anything else you would imagine, because just being Pharrell, he's not going to give you a straight story. He wanted to do it as a Lego movie. So, yeah, just the idea that he sits down with Morgan Neville, who is an incredible documentarian, you know, he's given us some great films, and says, hey, I want to do this, but the only way it's going to work is everybody has to be Lego pieces. And all of a sudden, you've got Jay-Z and Snoop Dogg and Gwen Stefani, all as Legos, talking about working with Pharrell. It is in theaters now. It is a joyous, really funny, and yet also kind of heartfelt story about a guy who knew he was always a little different and has been able to find a way to have just an incredible impact, but yet also still retain this childlike wonder with what he can do and what music can do in the world.
How do you think they talked like Jay-Z into being a minifig? You know, I mean, that it just doesn't seem like something Jay-Z needs to worry about.
Yeah, there were so many people and so many moments, you know, Busta Rhymes. I mean, again, I'm a huge hip hop head. So I'm sitting there watching Busta Rhymes talk about and Pusha T, and they're all doing this as themselves, but also as like, you know, they're going to be Lego characters. So it's like, huh. That's amazing. But I think the Jay-Z piece is the most interesting interview because Jay-Z points out the fact that he's like, yeah, we were working with this kid, but he was not really of the community in the way that everybody else was. He wasn't a kid who grew up in the projects. He wasn't slinging, you know, anything. He was just a regular skateboarding kind of goofy kid. And so I think Jay-Z, more than anyone else, kind of got that, okay, if this was going to happen in this way, this is the guy that you would have to sit down and do this kind of story for. And he's like, yeah, I'd be willing to do that for this guy. So that says an awful lot about Pharrell, that all of these people were willing to say, as crazy as this idea sounds, we want to do it because of you.
Yeah. Because a minifig is not the figure that most people want. I mean, they're a little blocky, little... Okay.
Not at all. And yeah. There's no expression. And yet the funny thing is, if you watch the film, they find ways to make all of these characters feel like they truly are in real life, which is not an easy thing to do. And it goes beyond the voice work. And they've got a great team that really put this together and had a lot of fun with it. So that hopefully audiences would too.
Huh. Well, you also write about Road Diary, the movie's called Road Diary, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. The boss was part of that We Are the World thing too.
Yes,
that we
was.
Talked about. I watched this over the weekend. What do you think makes this film special? What was your favorite part about it?
You know, there have been a couple of music docs that Springsteen has been a part of. We had Western Skies, I believe, which came out in 2019. It's the same director working with him and the band and everything together. And this is kind of the post-COVID version of his story where he kind of recognized that, okay, yeah, when the world shut down, we weren't sure as a band or a world what was going to happen next. And he's like, well, yeah, but if we ever get through this, and we get back together again, I want to put on a really great show. And I believe and truly believe that that was the only thing that mattered to him, is putting on a great show. I find myself, though, I was not necessarily a huge Springsteen fan in the 80s. I knew his music, of course. You couldn't escape it at the time. But I have a lot of respect for him just as a person. He still feels like that working class rock and roll hero that he really became and has become over the course of his career. So I look at him now and I love this film. And I think the thing that for me, and I even wrote about it, and I almost, as I think about what I wrote, it almost was like I got it wrong in a way, because I was kind of like, this doc feels like it could be like a farewell in a way, but it's not. He is not planning on quitting at all. But it does feel like, you know, the band, the E Street Band has lost a couple of members along the way. you know, they're getting older. And
yeah, he's in his 70s, right? 75, something like that. Yeah.
And there's a chance that, you know, time is going to hit that band pretty hard at some point, and you hold your breath and hope that they're going to continue to be able to do it as long as they can. But this Road Diary is a great reminder that if you go see him one last time, whenever it is, you need to go and prepare to have a really good time and know that he's not going to shortchange you at all. Even if he has to go out on stage, he's going to go out like a champ.
Yeah. I did enjoy the interviews with the other members of the band who were like, you know, we are a lot older than we were in the 1970s, but he wants us to play this like it was back then. Here's a question. Did you watch all the way past the credits? Trick question for you, because that was my very favorite part of the documentary. If you haven't seen it, like, Pat, there's little dancing at the end.
Yeah, I think I did see everything. It's been so weird. I've seen so much stuff over the last couple of days that, yes, I do think I stayed through the end.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I liked him.
Yeah.
And I liked the band even more. Just because, again, there were these quiet moments, and again, I know this is probably not what you're thinking of, but for me, the big standout moment you see at the end of the show that, you know, they document, where everyone is coming off stage, and he shakes hands or fist bumps and says something to all of the band members as they're leaving the stage, and he does one last song, just him and the guitar and a harmonica maybe, and you know, he does it so well, and he's leading the audience, and the audience ends up singing, and he's able to stop and let the audience kind of take control of the song and close it out. And I think that's, and they talk about it a lot in the film, that's his power. He always makes sure that as much as he wants the band to be on top of everything, every break, every signal, they're paying attention to him, he's paying attention to the audience.
Yeah.
And the audience is paying attention to him. So you go to that show, you're a member of the E Street Band. And that's, like, you can't get that from anyone else.
Yeah. And I'll tell everybody who hasn't seen this, if you watch it, watch past the end of the credits. It'll give you the warm fuzzies. It's very sweet. You write about 6 films in your essay on our website, wbxu.org. As always, I tell everybody, go read that essay. I want to ask you about another one on your list, Luther Never Too Much, about the life and music of Luther Vandross. You called this one heartbreaking. Explain why.
This really was. I saw this in Sundance earlier this year. And again, I generally liked Luther a lot. Respected what he could do, great singer-songwriter, great performer. But what you get out of the film is this idea that he kind of knew every step of the way. There were you know, obstacles that he had to overcome. He always figured out, okay, whether it was I'm writing jingles, I got to write the best jingle that's going to get me to the next stage. I'm singing background for, you know, David Bowie or whoever else. I want to leave this stage and move to the next point of my career. He always attacked and figured everything out, except for the idea that he never found love. And, you know, the title of it is Never Too Much. And he gets to that ending point in the film where he's like, wait a minute, the one thing that I haven't accomplished is I haven't found that love in my life. And he writes the song, and it's Any Love. And when you think about it, you hear that song, and we've probably all heard it 1,000 times, but we never thought about what it meant. This is a man who's basically saying, I'll just take any love. Like, it doesn't matter. Just, I want somebody to love me, and I want to love somebody. And he didn't have enough time to find that person. That's the only thing he didn't accomplish. But yeah, I cannot listen to that song anymore and just be happy-go-lucky about it. I listen to it now, and I'm like, that's him. And it's his final plea that he wasn't able to kind of solve to, like, wrap his life up in a bow. And yeah, it was heartbreaking. Really was. Yeah. But beautiful. It really is beautiful, but you just look at it and you're like, wow, that says something about not just him, but all of these performers who are getting these stories told about them. They are everybody. They're just like the rest of us. you know, yes, they've got that elevated stage and the opportunity and can do these amazing things, but they're just people at the end of the day. They are just like us. They have families and highs and lows and everything else. And in his case, yeah, that notion of just not being able to find that one little piece that would have really completed him is, it's a powerful reminder to all of us. And I think the film does a very good job of like nailing that home too. We should all walk away from that and think, well, wait a minute, there's just something that I haven't done in my life. I need to get on it. Yeah. I need to make that happen.
Yeah. Can't wait too long.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in your essay, you also talk about the documentary we'll probably never see, and that is a film about the artist Prince, one of the very few people who did not have a part in We Are the World. I read reviews that he thought the song was terrible and would not be part of it. So, you know, that's the story there, apparently. But I have to say, I was really disappointed to hear that, too. I was and am a big fan of Prince's music. But reading about the concerns the estate had, it kind of made me wonder what Prince would have wanted. He's not here to shape that documentary. And he was somebody who was very exacting about his music and how it was presented and sounds like a perfectionist. And you kind of wonder how he would want his story told. And it made me think, how important do you think it is for films like this, these documentaries, to explore the lives of these artists fully, kind of warts and all? Or do you think it's okay for them to be just kind of love fests for the fans? Because all of these artists have so many fans out there.
Right. I mean, I think there's a way and an opportunity to probably do both of those things. You need to service the fans, of course, because, yes, the sense of nostalgia is going to be there. We're all going to have these memories of when we first heard, you know, what were likely our favorite songs. And again, Prince is my favorite artist of all time. So, yeah, I would want to, you know, see this story. But I also feel like in some ways the things that his estate happened to be concerned about are, in a really interesting way, things that he already brought up with us. I mean, if you watch Purple Rain, which is loosely based on his life and his story, you see his father's issues with and his mother and women in his life. And we see Prince struggling with these same things as the kid in the film and potentially being abusive to those closest to him. So he opened that door for us a little bit, but was able to couch it in this idea that this isn't completely my true story. But if he gave us enough of those clues, he's letting us know that there were things about his life and his experiences that he found troubling himself. So I think he would be willing to go down that path a little bit, I think. He might not want to share everything, but yeah, I mean, I think, again, we need to see and understand that all of these people, and he's a great example of it. He is not just larger than life. He is outside of life in a way. He was such an unusual presence. You know, everything that he did, from changing his name because he couldn't get the rights, you know, to his music in the way that he wanted, to, you know, the questions of his sexuality, which were always present throughout his life, and he never seemed to care about it, which is, again, it's one of those ways he was outside of all of these ordinary concerns that the rest of us have to deal with. We need to trust the artist.
Yeah, and gosh, that filmmaker's worked on this for years and years,
yes,
too. Oh. Well, I have been talking with film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi. You can read his essay about these new music documentaries on our website, wvxu.org. I encourage everyone to get on your computers or your phones or whatever you're using and look for that right now. Thank you so much for your time, T.T.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.